As sunset settles over sea, another sun shall come for thee. The flame approaches, wizards clash, and all shall be reduced to ash but those inside the ziggurat. Their trial passed, they worry not. With keys in hand and fates decreed, they mourn a moment, then proceed.
Hi, welcome back to the Adventure Zone Royale, our new season of our ancient, decrepit role-playing podcast.
Wow.
Last legs.
We are the shambling husks of the McElroys with a combined age of 260 years old. Thank you all for coming back and joining us. If you missed our first episode, you should probably go listen to that because we introduced
all
the
characters. It's so wild to skip to this one.
So bonkers.
What's wrong with you?
We got to meet our three characters. Helgrammet, played by Clint McRoy, the Thrykeen Nasty Man.
Hello.
We got Lorevith, Dream Wanderer. What's that last name again, Juice?
Ganjabon.
That's going to stick in there probably around episode 4 or 5.
It's actually printed on the sheet in front of you.
The Goliath rough boy. And we got Rictus Ravenwood IV, the neon sheep of the Ravenwood necromantic dynasty.
Oh, I like that. I like the neon sheep. That's good.
In our last episode, you all passed your first trial where we got to take looks at your past, presents, and futures, and you were incapacitated by a magical gauntlet, and you awoke here on the island of the Octave Ziggurat. I have made a map. We will share it online with some points of interest here. At the ziggurat, just to sort of set
things up.
How'd
you make that, Griffin? It's real good.
Yeah.
Procreate does this great thing where if you draw... Well, okay. It does a great thing where if you draw a circle, it'll make it look better than it actually does.
Oh, nice.
And then, you know, I did a little watercolor. I put a lot of work into this one. I'm pretty proud of this here map. And this is going to be our setting for the whole campaign. So a lot of stuff here. Let's begin. The sky above you all ignites as this great fireball, roughly the size of the island that you're standing on, breaches the clouds above you and just kind of hangs there. And from all around you, you hear the reflexive screams of your fellow aspirants, but with a wave of his hand, the first Octave Osham, who is standing up on the higher tier of this ziggurat fortress in front of you, weaves this magical field of silence over the crowd. He says,
my sincere apologies, but you will want to hear this. Welcome, aspirants, to the trial of abjuration, the school of arcane wards and protections. One such ward, and a potent one at that, has been placed over this ziggurat. In 60 minutes' time, the flames above shall descend, and only those standing within this barrier shall survive its fury.
And immediately you see one aspirant in this sort of circle of participants in this conclave. You see a man wearing pretty simple casual clothes, white tank top, gold chain around his neck. He just sets off in a dead sprint for the ziggurat, for the fortress in front of you. And as he reaches the door, he is blasted backwards 20 feet by this shimmering field of light that appears. And Osham says,
it would behoove you to let me finish my instructions, Bobby Dazzler.
And he stands up and sheepishly walks back to the circle of wizards. And Osham explains the rules. He says,
scattered across this island are 48 keys.
With a key in your possession, you shall be granted entry into the ziggurat, thereby passing this second trial.
And as he says that, this enormous illusory stopwatch appears in the sky over the ziggurat, its hands indicating the time remaining while these three sort of concentric circles of illuminated dots display 48 keys. And he says,
the keys are crafted from three different metals, each with a corresponding reward awaiting those who pass this trial. Now, the 24 bronze keys will be the easiest and safest to recover, but they carry with them no advantages, save for your guaranteed survival from the flames. 16 silver keys shall prove more of a challenge and grant a proportionate leg up in the remaining trials to the wizards canny enough to find them. And finally, the 8 gold keys will provide their owners with future benefits beyond belief. But be warned, pursuing these golden keys without caution or protection will end your life long before the fires fall. You may only hold one key in your possession at a time. Any aspirant who attempts to hoard multiple keys shall be penalized. Also, you may not attack, harm, injure, or otherwise accost your fellow aspirants during this conclave, except under certain conditions.
And as he says that, the carpet of grass you're all standing on turns bright red. He says,
when standing in a red zone, you may be attacked for two reasons, and two reasons only. One, if you're holding a key. And two, if you've attacked someone else during the course of this trial. Anyone who attacks another aspirant who does not satisfy these conditions or attacks beyond the boundaries of a red zone shall be thoroughly punished. And you will come to understand the extent of the Octave's power throughout your time here, but for now, believe me when I say that you simply cannot transgress upon our rules without us knowing.
Finally, you'll notice the gauntlet that has been fastened around your arm during the previous trial. This is your grimoire, and it shall prove an essential tool during this conclave.
You will discover its usefulness in time, but I will share with you this one vital function. If you have any questions about the conclave, the current trial, or any rules that have been outlined here, merely tap the stone set into your gauntlet and assistance will be provided. To the 48 of you brave and cunning enough to pass this trial, we shall greet you inside. To the rest, know that while you fall short of your aspiration, your contribution to this institution will be eternally treasured. Begin!
And with that, the hands of the stopwatch begin to count down, and the second trial, the trial of abjuration, begins. Let's start things off to determine order with a good old-fashioned roll for initiative.
Okay. I got an 18 plus 2 for a gentleman's 20.
Amazing.
I got a 14 plus 1 for a somewhat less etiquette-bound gentleman. 15.
Well, Juice.
Yeah, I rolled a natural 20.
Juice rolled a natural 20. It is minus 2, so that is an 18, but congrats.
You can't minus from a natural 20. It just, I succeed in acting.
Well, not.
You get to act.
I don't think that applies to initiative rolls.
I don't believe it does.
No matter what.
Okay.
You can't take it away from a 20.
We will start then with Rictus Ravenwood IV. Immediately, as soon as he says begin and the clock starts counting down, the aspirants, almost all of them, just scatter and start running in every direction. From where you're standing, you are standing in front of the ziggurat on this island, this sort of central feature of this circular floating island. But all around you, even if you don't have a map spread out in front of you like we, the players and GM, do, you can see all kinds of crazy shit on this island, man. There's mountains and lakes and huge crystals and a tower and a little residential district and a giant fireball and a tent with a kitty cat head poking out of it. All kinds of wild stuff here. So I guess to start things off, Rictus, Ravenwood the Fourth, what's your game plan here? What do you think you'd like to do?
Rictus is going to play to his strengths and home field advantage and head for the graveyard.
Okay. Rictus, you run along the roads past the sort of residential district and over to the very edge of the island. It is disorienting, this being on this like giant floating disc hundreds and hundreds of feet above the ground. You are just sort of above a thin, wispy layer of clouds. You run along the side of this lake, along the edge of the island, to the graveyard, which is very much on the outskirts in the shadow of this giant mountain. From where you're standing, also, you can see the falls, just this big, clearly like artificially hewn waterfall in the
magically, you might say.
Yeah, you might say magically hewn waterfall in the side of this mountain.
And he does clock the kitty cat tent thing for later, because
it's hard not to. Yeah, it's a giant tent with a huge kitty cat head poking out of it. You're going to be making a roll to see how quickly you get here. Is there any other sort of supporting roll you want to do to, you know, maybe give yourself advantage on an athletics check to see how fast you run? What are you doing to kind of like get here quick? It seems like you've made up your mind very quickly. What is your strategy? Are you just sprinting? What's your plan?
I think I'm trying to think of what would benefit. I don't know that I have any supporting skills or anything that would help with that. So I think it's just, you know, he's running.
When you take off towards this part of the island, there's definitely a few other people kind of like heading in the same direction as you. If this was a Fortnite match, you would see lots of those parachute sound notifications nearby. Give me an athletics check, straight up, just to see how fast you are able to...
Not his strength!
That is a one. That is not great. Okay, it's a pretty straightforward path to the graveyard. You can like see the gate from where you start, but I don't know, man. Maybe Rictus doesn't drink enough milk, and he has...
Well, he doesn't run a lot. He's not an outdoor kid.
Okay, so there's a lot of flailing, a lot of flopping.
He spends a lot of time in graveyards, but mostly sitting around thinking about death, not like sprinting.
You see a young wizard, a woman wearing sort of like athletic gear, like track and field gear, just like blaze past you, just go flying past you, and you see her disappear into the graveyard as she gets there much, much quicker than you do. You see there's a couple other aspirants here at the graveyard by the time that you arrive. And they are furiously kind of like poking their heads around. As you enter the graveyard, it seems like the sky around you darkens as if there is some sort of, you know, field of gloom surrounding this place. Even though it is obviously, you know, double sunny outside with the giant fireball in the sky, it is still dark and gloomy in this graveyard. There are white, ivory white tombstones and statues and monuments all around you in this graveyard. And at the very back, you can see a what looks like a crypt or a mausoleum at the back. And there is a darkened archway where you saw this track and field star go sprinting into earlier. You have made it to the graveyard. There are some other people here. What do you do?
So, Griffin?
Yeah.
This is a fun time to discuss this. We all have one spell, right?
Yes, everyone in this world.
But we are, like, magically inclined.
Yes.
And we have, you know, arcana skills and shit like that. If there's, like, things we want to do that are magic adjacent, like, my thinking is Rictus has a lot of experience with, like, the undead and spirits and stuff.
Sure.
If I wanted to, like, call out and see if there's any spirits around, that would help me.
I would let you certainly do an arcana check. It would be a very high one, because this is, like, we are bordering on magic spell territory.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't know, you kick it at the crossroads, and there's lots, you have three ghost grandpas, so, like, it's certainly something that you are used to. So if you want to call out in the way that you would call out to one of your ghostly grandpas, I would allow an arcana check
for call out for a ghostly peepaw.
Okay.
That's a nat 20.
Jesus, holy Christ.
So it's a 25 total.
Game I over.
Mean, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, man, like, okay. Nat 20. With a nat 20, you feel a fluttering in your chest, and you think for a second maybe it's just the nerves. You know, you've just found out that some people are going to die here today. But then you look down, and from your pocket leaps the ghost of your great-great-grandfather, Rictus Ravenwood, period, mm-hmm. I think. Did I do the math on that right? If you're the fourth, your dad's the third, your grandpa's the third, yeah, okay. Your grandpa's the second, your great-grandpa's the first, yes.
Yeah.
He pops out of your pocket. He's so small, because ghosts get smaller as they get older.
Yeah. Are you telling me you got a grandpa in your pocket?
And he,
or am I just happy to see him?
He says, looks like you spotted me, Rictus the Fourth. I'm so sorry. I was just so curious. It's been so long since the last conclave, and I wanted to cheer you on.
Thank you, Rictus Prime. Listen, there's a kind of a timed element here. I'm trying to find like a gold key or silver bronze, honestly, any key at this point.
Do you want your great-grandpa to do a little poke around?
Yeah, if you could do a butcher's.
I'll give it a quick butcher's. It'll take me a while because I'm so small.
Oh, I understand, but like you look and I'll look and together I think we, you know, two heads better than one, all that stuff. Well, that's not true. We've tried that with bodies, but.
You got, oh boy, I remember those days. Double Frankenstein, we called him.
They're always trying to go different ways is the problem, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll take a quick butcher's and report back. And he hops down from your pocket and starts to very slowly kind of trot around the graveyard to help you get a lay of the land. With that, we're going to jump to the next in the order, which is...
Oh, wait, I forgot. I love you.
I love you too, great.
You're the only one I like.
Same.
Okay.
My son and his son were real dickholes.
I know, right? That's my dad, but yeah.
Whee! He flies away. We're off to Lorvith Dream Wonder Gonjabon. You are, this is all, you know, happening within the span of, you know, less than a minute. So
flash sideways.
Flash sideways. The timer starts counting down. Everyone takes off. Where is Lorvith's attention?
Lorvith is drawn to the mountain.
Cool.
This is his people's native geography. Not geography. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
His native
home turf
biome.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The mountain, like you can see it from anywhere on this island. It is these sort of two towering peaks that hang over everything, casting a
he is
a
making
wide shadow.
By the way, no, he's not in any way hiding the fact that he is headed towards the mountain. He is bounding there with all the confidence in the world, ready for whatever.
Amazing. So I want you, I mean, this is going to be another athletics check to just see how quickly you can get to the mountain. If you have any way you can think of, you know, improving or augmenting your running speed here, I would love to hear it.
No, I have some powerful abilities when it comes to like hand-to-hand combat and my size, but nothing that is going to help in this effort, I think.
Okay, personally. Cool. Go ahead and give me that athletics check then, please. Travis, I just noticed you rolled a critical failure and then you rolled a nat 20.
Yeah, it's been a hell of a day.
Yeah.
18 plus 3.
Holy shit. Okay. Hey. 21. That is quite good. All right. You are able to... You take off, right? As you look to the side, you actually see your old pal, whose name is, of course, on my list of names. And so I'm going to read it right... Gracon, you see, He is not running towards the mountains. Your rival, your Goliath rival, he takes off towards the arena next to you. And he kind of grunts at you in recognition as you two sort of cross paths.
Oh, ha, good.
Yes!
I give him a playful shove.
All right, you give him a playful shove. As you do that, your gauntlet vibrates.
All in good sport, man. All in good sport.
And then it stops vibrating, as if to say, like, watch it, man. Hey, man, watch it. 21, really good. You go sprinting around the ziggurat here. You reach this strange sort of arced field where you can see these eight sort of domes, white domes popping out of the ground, each with like a little tiny door on them. And these are the eggs, as you can see on the map. You are able to just like leap and slide over them and reach the...
I also prepared myself mentally to not get distracted by them.
By the eight giant eggs.
Like, I knew you would try to get me to look at the eggs.
So Griffin's like, always trying to get us to look at eggs. Like, on the show, off the show, it doesn't matter.
Anytime.
I stopped learning how to do art in basically middle school around the day that they taught, like forced perspective and how to draw 3D geometric shapes. And I was like,
3D Giamatti?
3D Giamatti. And I was like, I don't need to learn anything else. And so that's what is just a
always
lot of,
eggs.
Yeah.
A lot
He's
of cubes.
He's drawing them. He points them out in shops.
I love it. I love a good egg. You make it to the base of the mountain. You can definitely see some aspirants behind you trying to, you know, make their way towards this big mountain thinking, hey, there's got to be some good keys in there. But you get here first. So,
yeah, my plan is this. I've lived my entire life in the mountains. I know the mountains. I've had to hunt in the mountains. My theory is that whoever placed the keys here, it would have been tough for them to navigate the mountains safely. This is not a terrain, maybe, I'm hoping, that they were comfortable with, and I'm sort of using the same tactics that I used to hunt prey to look for some sort of trail or track or something on the mountain, just because I understand that terrain so well.
Absolutely. I'm going to give you advantage on a perception or investigation check here. Because I think the first thing you do, right, when you're tackling a mountain, even when you're a big Goliath who knows this shit, is, you know, look for your line. Look for, like, and also, of course, look for keys or any other sort of features of interest.
That first roll was 18 plus 1, 19. And then we got lucky me, as a 4. So,
we'll go with the 19. All right, 19, amazing roll. You sort of survey the mountain. You got here fast enough that you are able to take a few seconds to, like, really look around. You can see a few things here. Scattered around the mountain, the face of the mountain facing the center of the island, the ziggurat, everything else, there's some, like, climbing wall-looking deals, at the top of which you can see a few copper keys. You know, they are not particularly hidden. They would require some good climbing, some lightly hazardous climbing to get up to reach these copper keys. But you can see quite a few of those. But with your finely tuned mountain climbing instincts, you notice two other things. One is a cave. It is 60 feet up a pretty craggy rock face. You think that a smaller person might have some trouble getting over it, but you don't think that you would have a particularly hard time getting up to reach this cave. And it's quite dark. You can't quite see anything from where you are standing. That's sort of on the left, spire, the left mountain here. To the right, you can see a somewhat shorter wall, also quite craggy. And at the top of that, you can see a very small blue crystal that is floating in the air. So, to recap, with your great roll, you can see some copper keys with some not-so-challenging climbs around them. You can see the entrance to a cave, and you can see a floating blue crystal. Which are you going to pursue?
I have to go for the floating blue crystal, of course.
Okay, awesome. I'm going to want you to give me another athletics check here, and I will give you advantage on this one as well, just for how well your mountain climbing has gone so far.
Okay, 2 plus 3, 5.
Not
or
awesome.
Okay, so 18, 15 plus 3.
Okay, great. As you set off up this rock, you hear footsteps behind you, and from behind you, you turn and you see 4 wizards approaching in formation. And very clearly, by the way they're dressed, you can tell these 4 wizards know each other. They are wearing bright colored suits. There's a red one and a yellow one and a green one and a blue one. And they are they're wearing helmets that match their colors.
They are Power Rangers.
They do look like magical Power Rangers, yeah, in fact.
I'm rooting for them.
You see the Magic Rangers.
Not against you, Justin, but just against everyone.
I get it. They jump onto the mountain face as you are climbing up it, and you can hear them cheering each other on. You hear one of them say, come on, Ignacio, you got this. You got this, dig, everything you got. But because you are so big and because you were born on this mountain, not this mountain, but a similar one, you reach the top first and reach the blue crystal while they are still trying to scale to catch up to where you are.
Let's see. Let's do a quick... Oh, man. I think I have time for a quick arcana check before I grab it. I'm going to squinch one out real quick.
Yeah, squinch out a quick arcana check.
Let me just squinch a quickie.
There's a great vibe right
there. I got a 9.
Okay, with a 9.
How's it feel, man?
With a 9, I will say this. Like, you can't tell what the fuck this thing is. But you do have this, like, gemstone in your gauntlet that is, like, a different color, slightly larger, more... more rough, less like, you know, cut and prepared of a gemstone. But you can't tell like what is going to happen to you if I grab the
crystal.
Okay. I
put it in my gauntlet.
Cool. You reach out and touch this crystal, and as you do, it stops floating in the air, lowers into your hand, and you slot it into one of the studs in your grimoire, and in that exact moment, you remember things that have never happened to you. We'll come back to you to resolve that in just a moment. Helgrammet, you're up.
Helgrammet heads into the garden. For one thing, he, you know, is pretty tied to nature, but on another hand, people have always tried to keep insects out of their gardens.
Yeah, this will shut him down.
So he's just got this compulsion. He just wants to go into the garden.
Absolutely. Okay, so this is fairly close to you, right? Like, just by virtue of the way that you all were positioned, the gardens is sort of the closest feature to Helgrammet. So I want you to make an athletics check, but it is going to be, you know, a little bit lower just because you don't have quite as much distance to cover. And if you have any way of modifying that check, then...
I've got stuff with dexterity, but not really anything with athletics. I'm pretty low on athletics. What about me?
Okay.
Backflip your way there.
Boy, no kidding. How about a 2?
I did a 1, Dad, so don't feel bad.
Oh, wow. I was confused there. Okay. Helgrammet. You turn to face the gardens. They are... on the outskirts of the island, on the other side of like a little outdoor lecture hall area, you can see next to you, Helgrammet, you see a goblin who is dressed in sort of ragged clothes and has like a bandolier that appears to be empty because you all, you know, did not bring weapons or anything into here. But he looks like a nasty customer. He looks, your eyes meet briefly as you both turn and take off towards the gardens. He is quite a bit faster than you, though. He leaps effortlessly over the stage of the lecture hall here, and he makes it to the entrance to the gardens. Before you do, you see him take off down this stone pathway leading through just towering plants of so many different varieties. There are exotic tropical flowers and trees with unrecognizable fruits growing off of them. I'm imagining, like, whenever you complete a Mage's Guild quest line in a Elder Scrolls game and you get, like, the garden with every imaginable plant right. in it, that's right. sort of the kind of vibe that we're talking about here.
Okay.
Are you chasing the goblin, or are you, trying to observe the situation before running in?
No, I think I'm going to go ahead and run in.
Okay, cool. Fortune favors the bold sometimes. You race into the gardens. I'm going to say while you are running into the gardens, following this stone pathway, chasing this goblin, he is running with intention to a degree that suggests that maybe he has seen something further down.
Griffin, I wanted to congratulate you on having the guts to pin that sometimes to fortune favors the bold.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a much more honest
and
applicable thing.
And it makes no promises.
Yeah, it makes no promises. It says, if you're bold, it might work out, and it might also not.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like,
fortune
so go ahead, tough guy.
Equally favors the bold and the meek.
Right. Yeah. It's like, go ahead or don't. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, whatever, dude.
I think it maybe does make the idiom less helpful.
A little less helpful. Yeah. Fortune favors the bold sometimes.
Yeah. Give me a perception check, Helgrammet, as you are, before you were sort of standing above the garden,
jeez,
sort of looking down.
That's
now
a
you
four.
Are four. Okay. That ain't going to do it. Four. You see this goblin in front of you, and you see him reach this plinth, at the very back of the gardens. There's nothing but some tall, strange-looking viney trees between where this goblin is standing and the edge of the island. He reaches this plinth, and as you turn the corner of this path, you see him reach out and grab the golden key that is floating there. And he holds it aloft, and you hear him shout, "Things are looking up for Powder Keg Kelly!" And then you see the vines behind him rustle, and from those vines you see these great leafy blades slice down, absolutely destroying this goblin, whose corpse falls to the ground, sending the gold key floating back on top of the plinth. And as that happens, you all hear a bell chime over the
ziggurat. And it sounds like this. In the arms of the angels.
As he falls, you see the stone that was set into his grimoire start to clink and vibrate, and then it pops out of the hole in the gauntlet where it was seated, and you see it fly up into the air and out of sight. And then those viney blades, proud of the work that they have done in killing this goblin, turn to face you, Helgrammet.
Hey, everybody, in case you've somehow missed it, Story and Song, the final graphic novel in our Adventure Zone Balance graphic novel series, comes out next week. You can pre-order it right now at theadventurezonecomic.com. If you pre-order from one of our indie bookstore partners, you'll get a book plate signed by one of us and Carrie. Book release event next week in Boston. Tickets are on sale now. It's going to be July 16th at 7 p.m. at the Chevalier Theater. Each ticket includes a signed paperback copy of Story and Song provided by Brookline Booksmith. And we have a special mid-month episode of Clubhouse on Tuesday, July 14th to celebrate the book coming out. And the regular monthly Clubhouse is still on the 21st, so check that out. We've got some new merch this month. There's a Trav Nation Centennial Magnet, along with a bunch of other great stuff. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will also be donated to the Asian Pacific Environmental Network. So go check that out, macroymerch.com, and back to the show.
All right, we're over 70 episodes into our show. Let's learn everything. So let's do a quick progress check. Have we learned about quantum physics?
Yes, episode 59.
We haven't learned about the history of gossip yet, have we?
Yes, we have. Same episode, actually.
Have we talked to Tom Scott about his love of roller coasters?
Episode 64.
So how close are we to learning everything?
Bad news. We still haven't learned everything yet.
Oh, we're ruined!
No, it's good news as well. There is still a lot to learn. Woo! I'm Dr. Ella Hubber.
I'm regular Tom Lum.
I'm Caroline Roper, and on Let's Learn Everything, we learn about science and a bit of everything else too.
And although we haven't learned everything yet, I've got a pretty good feeling about this next episode.
Join us every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
If you want to know what's going on in the world of movies, you should be listening to Maximum Film so we can tell you all about it.
Okay, but what if you already know what's going on in the world of movies? What if you're kind of obsessed with movies, like maybe you have a problem?
Well, then you should definitely be listening to Maximum Film, because we too have that problem, and it's important you know you're not alone.
We're talking indies you'll want to seek out.
Blockbusters and blockbusting wannabes.
Classics we can't get enough of.
I'm comedian and writer Kevin Avery.
I'm film critic Alonzo Duraldi.
I'm festival programmer and producer Drea Clark.
Together, we're Maximum Film. Smart about movies in Hollywood, so you don't have to be.
But if you already are, that's also great. And hey, we see you.
New episodes every week on MaximumFun.org.
Rictus, back to you. You are poking around the graveyard. Your tiny ghost grandpa is giving you aid. Give me an investigation or a perception check, and I will grant you advantage this time. I don't think I'm going to grant you forever advantage on investigation and perception checks just because you have a ghost grandpa, but right now.
You know. Okay, I got a 16 and a 19.
Okay, 19. You see a couple other aspirants poking around in the graveyard, and one of them has found a shovel and is like digging up graves, which seems somewhat desperate. You see there are some skeletons towards the back of the graveyard, sort of in the back corner, where one aspirant is like trying to restrain them to reach a bronze key just beyond where they are standing. And then you see the mausoleum at the back of the graveyard. You cannot see anything beyond sort of the archway, but you know that is...
But the athletic wear person hasn't come back out?
The athletic aspirant sprinted inside has not come back out. You also see your grandpa float over to you, and he says,
"Well, I took a look in the falls, and I saw something quite peculiar behind the waters. There's a beautiful, no keys, but a beautiful blue crystal, and it seems like it had a lot of juice, if you know what I'm saying. I wasn't much of a magic user in my day, as you've probably heard the stories, but it seems rife with all that good magical stuff."
But there are no key. Did you bring it?
I'm intangible, oh, my right, sweet boy.
Yeah. Can I get to the falls from here, Griffin?
Yeah, there is a narrow pathway. The falls are sort of recessed into the mountain to a point where, like, there's not a clear path to walk behind them. You would have to figure out some way to, like, get through the water, but you could reach, there's, like, a little shore here where you could reach where the falls are splashing down fairly easily.
But she's been in there a while, right?
She has, yeah.
He heads to the mausoleum.
Okay. Rictus, you sprint into the mausoleum. As you reach this archway, you find yourself standing at the top of some decrepit stone spiral stairs leading downward. And as you go down them, you feel just this oppressive death vibe that is... I mean, I think it's oppressive even to you, someone who lives in a like death kingdom. You know that there is something extremely powerful and extremely you know, death aligned down here. You reach the bottom of the stairs and you are standing at one end of a long stone bridge. And this long stone bridge is standing over a black void that you cannot see the bottom of. You also can't see the walls or ceiling of this chamber that you are in, this mausoleum chasm. And at the other end of the bridge, you can see a really big statue, like 15 feet tall, carved from dark stone. It is a figure, a hooded skeletal figure, not too dissimilar from a, you know, traditional angel of death, a Charon, if you will. I need to learn how to say that name.
Karen.
It's not. It can't just be Karen.
Okay.
It couldn't just be Karen.
Do you like Sharon better?
Charon.
Sharon is better.
Charon.
Charon.
Yeah, Charon.
You see,
I like Sharon.
You see this figure.
But Charon also sounds like if you're going to do a robot Karen.
Yeah. Or if it's like, well, care was off, but then.
Yeah.
We switched it.
But if you want to share with somebody, Charon, I don't know. There's a lot of ways to go with this.
You reach the one side of this bridge as you come down the stairs. You see this statue at the far end. You can see that its bony, carved hand is outstretched, and it is grasping onto a golden key. And then you can see this track and field star standing pretty close to this statue at the other end of the bridge. And something is clearly not right with her. She kind of wobbles a little bit as she takes a step backwards away from the statue. You see her turn to face you, and as you do, you can see that her eyes have just gone kind of pitch black. And she smiles, and then she flings herself over the side of the bridge that you are standing on.
Can I reach her?
You can absolutely try if you would like.
Yeah, I'm going to try to.
Okay, you are going to need to give me first, I think, a dexterity check or, I don't know. If you're running, right? If you kind of realize what's happening here and you take off in a run, I think athletics. If it's just like agility to see how quickly you can reach down and grab her before she plummets
into the
void. Yeah, I'm just
going to dive for her hand.
Okay, then yeah, I think this is just going to be a straight up dexterity check. We're going to say it's a, if you want to reach her in a way that is going to be, steady and safe, I'm going to need a 15 out of it. You'll be able to reach her with a 10, but you are going to be in some danger if that is the case.
That's an 11.
Okay, with an 11, you can tell that she is possessed before she even turns around. And so you take off running even before she heaves herself over the edge. You are, again, not the fastest kid in gym class. And so you are not able to grab her before she falls. You do slide on your belly, kind of like you're going into home plate, and manage to grab just the edge of her wrist and get a good grab on her wrist. But you are starting to fall off the edge of the bridge just through the weight of holding on to her. She is also, unfortunately, wearing like a sweatband wrist cuff that is making it really tough to keep your grasp on her. Compounding the issues that you are currently facing as you are deep underground beneath this graveyard, you start to feel this presence from the statue at the back of the room holding the golden key. It is starting to come for you now. And I need you to make a wisdom saving throw, please.
A wisdom saving throw? What's it trying to do to me? Is it trying to charm me?
Yes.
Okay, I have advantage against that.
Oh, great. That's very, very, very helpful right now. Because you've gotten yourself into a very dangerous situation. Okay.
Yeah, so I got a 19 was my highest for a wisdom save.
Okay, so a 19 just barely beats this this oppressive force. Yeah. And I think what I will give you with that is, like, you're in so much danger right now. This thing is exceedingly evil and extremely powerful. And if you spend much longer on this bridge, you are not going to be able to resist it. You are still holding on to this aspirant, but she is still under this thing's thrall and is, like, actively wiggling to get out of your grasp.
Still looking at me?
Still looking at you.
I spit in her eye.
Gross.
Gross.
Make an attack roll.
And I want to hear the sound.
No, I don't want to hear the sound.
Well, so here's the thing. My hands are holding her.
Yeah, no, this it's Travis. It's disgusting, but I fully understand the intention of doing this.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's the wrong choice.
Okay. You spit and it misses. You're a fancy little pseudo royal here. You spit and it just kind of droobles down.
I keep trying to spit. I spit again.
Well, she's gonna spit back in your eye.
Okay. Yeah.
And she's gonna roll. Where's my dice?
This is a real classy affair we got going.
Yeah, no
here.
Kidding. She rolls a 14 versus AC.
Yeah, that hits.
Yeah, I mean, that gets you right in the eye, pal. And it stings. It hurts. I'm not going to make you take damage, but you are, if you continue to try to hold on, it is going to keep being pretty hard for you. I'm going to allow you to have one more move here before you have to make another wisdom saving throw.
Can I activate the gauntlet without touching it?
You were told that you had to tap the stone set into the gauntlet if you had any questions about the rules of the conclave or the trial that you are in.
Can I tap it with my nose?
You are certainly able to try. Do you have both hands holding on to her?
I mean, I think with an 11, I'm going to say I had to.
Yeah, yeah. How about this? You're able to kind of like bump it against like the side of the bridge to activate it. And as you do that, you see a little animated glowing figure eight appear above the stone, just a holographic illusory image. And you hear a voice say, "Hi, my name's Chris. I'm your personal companion here on the Conclave.
Okay, hi,
how
Chris.
Can I help you?
Yeah.
How can I help you today? How can I help you today?
Okay, cool, Chris. If I attack her to save her life, is that still against the rules?
Great question. It depends on the nature of your attack. The rules state that you can't injure or harm an opponent, but I suppose that if you're doing it to try to help or save an opponent, then the rule wouldn't trigger and you wouldn't be punished.
Excellent. I cast Wither and Bloom.
Okay.
So she needs to make a Constitution saving throw and beat 13.
That is a 9.
Great. She's going to take 5 points of damage.
Okay.
And I also then grant the healing to her.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so she gets to use...
She gets to expend a hit dice.
Yeah,
a hit
dice to heal back.
The way that... What is the spell?
Plus my spellcasting modifier, which is +3.
Perfect. I mean, it's just going to heal her back up to full. What's it look like when you use this spell on a person, and have you used this spell on a person before?
No. I don't think I have. I think I've used it on the undead. I think I've used it on animals and plants. This is my first time using it on the undead. And you see, basically out of the two hands holding him, a spectral, like, skeletal hand comes out of his right hand. And grasps and takes, and then a like glowing golden, like angelic looking hand comes out of the left and gives.
Fucking killer. Awesome. You see as this first spectral hand reaches out and grabs onto her wrist just below the cuff, you see the life start to drain out of her. You see her cheeks become kind of sallow. As this happens, you do see this like black inky void that has covered up her eyes just dissipates. And she looks up at you horrified. And then as the other hand reaches out and restores her, that sallowness fades. And she looks up at you and says, "Get me the... Oh, wait, what does she sound like? I need a Voice-a-tron.
We all do. That's why today we're selling Voice-a-trons for 5 low payments of $9.99. You too can have a Voice-a-tron at home.
She looks around and she...
Rachel made me a Voice-a-tron.
That's, I guess I gotta just...
You should ask. Yeah. You should ask nicely, though.
Yeah.
Not your usual way.
You know how you do sometimes.
Trav, you know the way he gets...
Oh my God, do I? Huh?
She looks around, looks confused for a moment.
He's kind of being like it right now.
And she looks at you in the face and says, pull me up, pull me up, pull me up, oh my God,
yeah,
pull me up.
Yeah, I'm trying. You gotta pull too. Come on.
Okay, with advantage, try pulling her up. I think just strength check. Just to get her up onto the bridge with advantage because she is quite strong and able to help out too.
Yeah, it's 11. She's helping.
She is helping. You don't drop her, but I do need you to make another wisdom saving throw, please. And you do have advantage against being charmed, but it is a high check. 13.
Oh, thank God. 23.
23 does do it. You pull her back up onto the bridge, and she says, let's get the fuck out of here! And
is there a key?
There is a key. It is in the clutched hand of this statue. I will tell you straight up, if you try to make an effort to get this key out of here, you are going to continue to face this danger head on. Up to you if you want to continue doing it. You've had some pretty damn good rolls so far. But she's not going to wait around. She says, thanks, as she takes off and just fucking sprints out of the chamber across the bridge.
Yeah, he's going to... Oh. Is he brave?
As you consider that, we're going to bounce over to Lorevith, Dreamlander, Ganjabon. You are remembering a day from the distant past, and you are... A little dwarf, balding, young dwarf, and you are working in the mines, and there is a lantern that falls and sets off a seam of gas cracking through the walls, and a huge flame erupts at you, and as it swallows you up, you can see your co-workers are injured and killed by this explosion. But as it passes, you look at your body and you realize that you were untouched by the flame. You are remembering, Lorevith, now years of training and practice of mastering this one unique spell, but it is not yours. It is somebody else's. You have, in a split second, internalized all of these memories. And now... you feel like you have control of a new spell, Absorb Elements, just as clearly and just as practiced as your original spell, Lightning Lure. You can cast two spells now. And with that, you snap back to the present, and you see the Magic Rangers just sort of scaling over the top of the cliff face. That you beat them up, and they look really disappointed. One of them say,
"No,
oh, the Goliath got it."
Yeah.
Oh, damn it!
Hell, I'm Lorevith. Don't be too hard on yourself, children. I know these hills my entire life.
You see the Blue Ranger say, do you think if we blow him off of the side of the mountain with a gust of wind that it would technically count as attacking, or...
Lorevith looks around, like, to try to figure out who they're talking about.
The four of them are just, like, now kind of huddled up, like, you hear the Red Ranger say, I don't know, I really wanted that crystal. It seems like it was really cool and powerful. And the yellow one says...
While they're talking, Lorevith picks up a stone off the ground.
Okay.
And, chucks it behind them.
Okay. You see them.
There you go. Go for it.
okay. They all. Are you trying to like deceive? Like do a.
Yeah, I want to try to convince. I'm trying to convince them that I threw it.
Give me a deception check, please.
Yeah. Okay. Not my strong suit. At 8.
They look down at this just brown rock that landed kind of at their feet. And you see the Green Ranger say, He's making fun of us now.
I admit I have no gift for subterfuge, and I charge past them towards the cave.
Okay, give me an athletics check as you begin to scale another cliff face towards the cave.
13.
13. Okay, 13 is good. You are able to get up there, but as soon as you jump on the side of the rock, you see the Yellow Ranger has joined you and appears to be maybe the one who is kind of earth element aligned of these elemental rangers, because she is able to get up the side of this cliff face with astonishing speed. You climb over the edge of the cliff face just in time to see her disappear into the cliff, into the cave. And as you clamber up and approach the cave, a solid just beam of flames, the width of the cave mouth itself, launches out and...
I cast Absorb Elements.
You are not, I will say, in this moment, not exactly in danger of, of this fire hitting you. you are off to the side, hold but on, you see this...
spell
just,
slot back.
Yeah, just suck that spell slot right back into your body. But you see just this column of flames come launching out from the cave. And then you hear silence from inside the cave. And then you hear the sound of a bell ring from over the ziggurat. And you see a small shining stone fly out of the cave mouth and upwards and disappear. That's two.
In the arms of an angel.
Knock, knock, knock.
Well, I'm going to wait then for a second.
a good plan. Give me a second. I have to mark Tremora off the list. Tremora, we hardly knew them. Next, let's hop over to Helgrammet. Helgrammet, from where you're standing in the gardens, you are surrounded by these deadly bladed plants. You are standing kind of at a junction of different paths in the gardens. You are, you know, a short sprint away from where this key is up on this plinth, but there are, no kidding, dozens of these blades coming out of the vines surrounding the plinth that appear to be in position, ready to strike should you approach. Down the other side of the path is a set of stairs leading out of the gardens and up onto the observation platform, which is this long sort of ironing board shaped wooden platform that actually stretches out over the edge of the island, at the very end of which you see a giant sort of magnifying glass lens overlooking the lands below. Also up on the observation platform, you can hear the sounds of a few people conversing heatedly. What do you
do? I want to do a nature check on the sword leaf plants?
Absolutely. Give me that nature check.
Okay. That would be 10.
Okay. Like I said, like this garden is a menagerie of exotic plants from all around the world. You don't know what these things are. You do know that those leaves are extremely sharp, which you probably could have figured out just in the manner that Powder Keg Kelly was, vivisected just moments ago. But unfortunately, I don't think you get any more than that.
Is the plinth in the middle of these sword plants?
Yes.
Okay, how close can I get to the plinth and still avoid the sword plants?
I would say you could make maybe an investigation check to try to like triangulate that. You know that you are not within striking distance right now. You also know that Powder Keg Kelly was in striking distance. And uh-huh. So, you know, you can't work out the exact distance away, like to the inch. But, if you want to investigate, you can.
My rolls are horrible.
Yeah. Seven does not cut it. You simply are not able to tell. The plants are different heights. They appear to be reedy and flexible, and so like you are just not sure where would be safe to stand.
Helgrammet is just driven. He wants that key.
Okay.
He is fixated on that key. So I think, all right, here's what Helgrammet is going to do. Helgrammet is going to cast infestation on the sword plants around the plinth. Not to damage them.
Oh, you can damage them. I've been.
Yeah, you can attack plants.
Well, but that's not the intent.
Okay.
The intent is to keep them occupied, and then he's going to make a dexterity check and try to snatch the key.
Okay.
I love how you got dads are like, my intent's not to damage. And both Griffin and Travis are like, fucking run wild on them, dude. Who cares?
Well,
plants, man.
I was more clarifying that the rule said you cannot attack other aspirants.
Right.
There is no rule against blasting.
Guys are just so hungry for plant damage. Also, that's all.
There's no rule that says a dog can't be the next aspirant.
That's true. That is true. Okay, plants must succeed on a constitution saving throw. These living vines are going to make a constitution saving throw. Okay, that is a 14 con save.
That saves them.
Okay, you're not going to deal any damage to these vines, and you're certainly not going to move them 5 feet in a random direction, which is sort of what infestation allows you to do. You do, like, conjure up a cloud of mites, fleas, and other parasites. Is there a specific type of bug that you're whipping up here?
Let's go with nits. I like nits.
Okay.
Yeah, this time.
Aren't those just eggs?
All right, let's make them skeeters. Little skeeters.
Okay.
Little skeeters.
These little skeeters. Famous plant eaters, skeeters. They fly over and start to swarm on some of these vines. I have to sort of respect the rolls so far and say, like, you're not 100% sure how much this is going to distract these plants, but you have put some bugs up on there.
Okay. Hopefully it's enough to distract them that I can succeed with a dexterity check and snatch the key while they're occupied.
You will be making a check if you approach these plants. A dexterity check to see like how nimbly you are able to grab this thing will certainly help, but they are going to attack you if you get into their zone.
Okay. All right. So make my dexterity check?
Yes, do a dex check first.
All right. That is an 18.
Okay, cool. For sure. You reach over, leaping over Powder Keg Kelly's body, and you grab onto the golden key from the plinth. And
Wait a minute. I have advantage on dex checks due to chameleon carapace. You change the color of your carapace to match the surroundings, giving you advantage on dexterity checks. So let me see if I can get a 20. Is that all right?
Sure. I'm looking at chameleon carapace. No, Dad, giving you advantage on dexterity stealth checks made to hide.
Stealth checks. Okay.
Nice try.
Okay.
Nice try, Mac.
I just didn't finish the sentence.
An 18 is still plenty good. You are able to grab this golden key. And then these vines are going to swing their blades down at you. They're going to make an attack roll. That is a 19 versus AC.
Yeah, that probably hits.
Okay. The first vine swings down and slashes across your body. You take 6 points of slashing damage. The second vine... it's 15 versus AC.
Yep.
It is going to slash you for 5 more points of slashing damage.
Well, it was a great run for Helgrammet.
Have you tapped out?
Oh, I only have 8 points.
Okay. The viney blades rear back and slash you once, twice, thrice, a lady, and Helgrammet, the Thrykeen wizard, falls to the ground, landing on top of the quite dead Powder Keg Kelly. And as you hit the ground, everything goes dark.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported directly
by you.